Welcome to Delaney Diamond Presents An Author Chat, where we interview authors about their books, writing process, and personal lives. This show is sponsored by the Delaney Diamond Readers Lounge, an online community of readers where we bond over great books and support programs that promote literacy and book distribution. To join us, visit DelaneyDiamond.com and select the Readers Lounge tab.
Welcome to Delaney Diamond Presents An Author Chat. I'm your host, Delaney Diamond, author of sensual and passionate romance in the contemporary romance and romantic suspense genres. Today, I'm chatting with Cheryl Lister about her novel, A Table for Two. But before we get started, let me take a few minutes to introduce her to you. Cheryl Lister is a multi-award-winning author who writes sweet, sensual, contemporary romance, romantic suspense, and women's fiction featuring intelligent and slightly flawed characters who always find love. She is a former pediatric occupational therapist with over 20 years of experience and often says she played for a living. California native, Cheryl is a wife, mother of three daughters and a son-in-law, and grandmother to two special little boys. When she's not writing, Cheryl can be found on a date with her husband or in the kitchen creating appetizers. Welcome, Cheryl Lister. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Delaney. I'm excited to chat with you today and all your readers.
Yes, I'm so excited that you're here. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm looking forward to talking about this book. But before we actually dive into the book, of course, we want to get to know you, the author, a little bit. And so I've got a couple of questions that I want to ask you so we can get to know you. Fair enough?
All right. Fire away.
Okay. All right. Okay. So you mentioned that you are a wife and yes. I'm going to be all up in your business and ask you, are you a good wife? Do you consider yourself a good wife? And if so, what makes you a good wife?
Okay. So I'm just going to be all the way out there and say that I'm an exceptional, amazing, and wonderful wife. So
all
just
right.
Put it all the way out there. Well, because I treat my husband like he is the king that he is. And I go above and beyond. So if he mentions something in passing that we haven't had for dinner and he'd like to have, just in passing, if it's too late in the day, it won't be on the table that day, but it will be on the table the next day. Mm-hmm. I go, you know, beyond to just surprise him with little things, big things, kidnapping him, like he kidnaps me. So I kidnap him too. And just try to do just special things, not just on holidays or special days, but all through the year. So
okay. Yeah. So what's this about the kidnapping? What does that mean?
Well, kidnapping means that, let's see, what I did, I remember the first time I kidnapped him, I literally went to his job before he got off. So, you know, suit and everything, made dinner reservations. So this is back in the time when, you know, we didn't have like iPods and music players and you could stream music. Mm-hmm. You had to spend all day, you know, with your five disc CD player trying to program all the songs that you wanted to play on there. So, yeah, that's what we did. So I did that and I actually went to his job and had them call him to come to the front. And it just so happened that one of the security on the front was a woman and she was all in and she was trying not to giggle. I had his suit, toiletry bag and everything. I'm like, okay, hey, he's like, what happened? What's going on? I was like, I need you to change clothes really quick. Let's go. And so basically I took him out to dinner and then we came back home. We danced, I lit candles. And so literally I had the remote control to the music in my purse. So as soon as he unlocked the door, I like hit the button and the music started.
Wow. That's
so
some amazing planning.
And we did whatever. And then the most recent thing I did was we celebrated our 25th anniversary 5 years ago in Montego Bay, Jamaica. And I had surprised, he didn't know this. I went and booked a private dinner over a gazebo out over the water. And it's a private dinner. And I had upgraded his ring. He didn't know that either. And being the author that I am, I had to write like a little scene like a booklet in the scene. I had a title for the book, everything, a little cover I made. It's called When I Said I Do. And at the end of the little scene of them, you know, talking, the husband and the wife, it says, and the server presented him with a ring. And our server presented him with a ring. So we had like the butler service and everything. So they all were in on it. They helped me plan it, get all the stuff ready. I had a playlist with my little speaker out there over the water. It was pitch black, nobody but us and candles. So it was wonderful.
Wow, that is so great. Yeah, you are an exceptional wife. You are right. That's great. Because, you know, sometimes, a lot of times actually, I see sometimes on, you know, on social media that people will actually, there'll be someone that says that they do, you know, things like that, like mm-hmm. go the extra mile for their spouse. And yeah. then there'll be all these other people sort of poo-pooing on it, basically, like, why are you doing all that? And blah,
yes,
blah, blah.
I have
and
seen
I'm just
that
like,
too.
Do y'all not like your spouses? Exactly. I don't understand how this works.
Exactly. I mean, I remember having, when I was a therapist, I had a teacher who, we were talking about some things and she's like, yeah, I was like, oh, my kids. And I said, oh, that's great. And you and your husband can spend time together. I wish I could just show y'all the myriad of emotions, the her expressions that crossed her face. And not one of them was a good one. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, she goes, why would I do that? I was like, so, okay. Why are you married then, ma'am?
Right. Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, but he does the same things for me too. So it's amazing. Right. It's wonderful.
Reciprocal. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
We date, we do the same things and probably more than we did when we first got together. So we have not changed in our respect of how we love on one another in 30 years. Because it'll be 30 years in September. So yeah.
Oh wow. Well, congratulations in advance. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you about inspirational quotes. One of the quotes that I personally like is, if you don't ask, the question is always no. Mm-hmm. And I love picking up inspirational quotes and reading them and things like that. Do you have any that you particularly like or live by?
I have so many. I was like, when reading that question, thinking, oh my gosh, I have no idea. I have so many that I do. And I do like the one that you said, that I always tell my kids, let them tell you no. You know, you don't assume they're going to say no. Ask the question. But one of my favorite is actually a scripture. It's Jeremiah 29:11, where it says, I know the plans that I have for you. That's just the beginning of the verse. And so I am always thinking about that. It's okay, Lord, I know you got the plans for me. And I'm just going to keep on doing what I do while you're working out that plan. So that's kind of where I am.
Okay. That's nice. I like that, because, you know, it's nice to know that you don't have to worry about what's down the road, right? You know,
right.
You exactly. have that confidence that things are going to be.
Okay. I'm not going to just be, you know, out there and say that I don't never get concerned.
Oh no. Right.
That we don't
right.
have the blip and be like, ooh, wait a minute, Lord, what you doing over here? Hold on. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah. But then I remind myself of that. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Helps to calm you. Yeah.
It does. It does.
Yeah. You got any favorite shows that you watch? Anything you can't miss during the week that you're just like,
SWAT and the Equalizer. Can you tell what kind of stuff I like to watch? Yeah, there it is.
Yes, I love the Equalizer. That's like,
I tend to try to, I try to wait until about four in before I start watching it, because I don't like waiting like that. And then we just binge on Sunday nights. We watch one episode of SWAT, one episode of Equalizer back to back. And then we catch up throughout, you know, so we right on par with it.
Right. Okay, nice. Okay, I'm going to shift gears a little bit, because I want to learn a little bit more about you as a writer. And the question that I want to ask you is, what inspired you to start writing, and why did you choose romance?
You know, I can't remember a time when I wasn't writing. Growing up, I was either reading or writing. I was the kid who, when they instituted that you have to read for the first 15 minutes of English class, I was doing a happy dance and a cheer saying, why can't it be 30? And my sister will tell you that growing up, she would either find me with a book reading or sitting out there with my little journal and writing stories. So I've always loved just reading and writing and creating those stories in my head. And romance, I think the genre chose me, because my very first story that I ever wrote would be categorized right now as probably young adult. And it was a romance. It almost got me kicked out of school too, but it was a romance.
Oh no.
I was 12 years old, seventh grade. And we had to write a creative story. And my teacher thought that I had plagiarized it because she told me no seventh grader could write a story like that.
Oh my goodness.
It was called The Most Dangerous Game. And it was a guy who wanted to buy a ring for his girlfriend and he didn't have money. So he was going to play Russian roulette. And, you know, she swoops in and saves the day. You don't have to buy me a big ring. And I don't want you to do this kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, so back then I even knew I was going to write romance. All right.
Right.
There it is.
Destiny.
Yeah, really. It's something. It's something. And I remember, you know, borrowing. Okay, not stealing, but borrowing. My mom used to read those Harlequin, you know, romances way back, and I'd peel for one, read them, peel for one, women. So it's kind of a full circle that my first deal was with Harlequin. So it's kind of like from stealing those books to actually writing for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So you mentioned in your bio that you used to be an occupational therapist.
Yeah.
Right. And, yeah. So I was curious to know, what other jobs have you had? Anything interesting that you're willing to share with us?
Actually, that was, what did I do before that? I worked as a clerk in a law firm.
Oh, I bet that was interesting. You saw some stuff there.
It was very cool. I mean, it was very cool. I was just a clerk in there, got paid under the table because he didn't want to have to do the thing. It worked out for me too. So no taxes, none of that, you know. It was great. So it was actually while I was in school. So it was that. And I remember before I started college, so I worked as a summer school teacher, teaching kindergarten in summer school as a teen. Because back in the day, you know, before they cut out all the good stuff, they had something called a CETA program. And it was a summer program during the summer to help keep the youth off the street in LA, in Los Angeles. And so all the kids, teens had jobs and everything. And then my godmother, who happened to be a principal, she got it at our church where they had a 6-week summer school program. And technically I was 14 and probably too young to actually have a job, but I got the job as a summer school teacher of kindergartners for the grand sum of $2.65 an hour.
And so I know you thought you were rolling in it, right?
I was at 14, $2.65 an hour. Working, what was it? I think we worked 20-25 hours a week. So, you know, at 14, that's a lot of money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was
and
great.
You're earning it yourself, which
yes,
you know, it gives
was.
You a sense
it
of was, independence.
It was. It was really, really great because, you know, there were some crazy times in our life. So it was nice to be able to say, oh, I can get my school closed this year, mom, you know, kind of thing. So it was nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Alice in the chat, she said, we thought we were making a lot of money back then, didn't we?
Girl,
and
yes.
We did.
$2.65 an hour? Listen.
I remember making $3 and change and
yeah,
thinking I was rolling it.
Look, that $3.35 stayed around for a long time for a lot of us, huh? Alice, you right.
Okay. So now I want to talk about your heroes and heroines. And I know that we're not supposed to play favorites, but I'm going to ask you anyway, do you have a favorite hero or heroine and what makes them special?
Oh gosh. I love all my heroes just because like every single one of them have a piece of my husband and what he does. But I think Khalil Gray from my Grays of Los Angeles series probably will have a little bit special place in my heart just because he lost his hearing, you know, in the book and had to navigate that road of being deaf for a little while and just the vulnerability that, you know, he showed. So
yeah.
Then I could say the same thing about Romeo in the Reluctant Bid too, but oh man, see, you can't ask that question.
Yeah, no, that's not a fair question, is it?
It's not. yeah. And for heroines, let's see. I love all my heroines too, but I don't know. Because some of them, you know, you'll get a little bit of my personality in some of them. But Serenity in this particular book probably has a good chunk of me because it's food, you know, the music.
The food. Yeah.
Like I said, I love experimenting and making my family guinea pigs. So I'm like, okay, I'm a guinea pig and y'all. They're like, okay, good.
That's not a bad thing. That's great.
Yeah, yeah, they love it. They and it's to That's the point good. Where I remember we went on vacation, our family vacation, the first time we went away, and there was a full kitchen. Oh, they got a full kitchen, so we don't have to go there. Mom could cook. I was like, no, mom's on vacation too. No.
Right.
We rather have you
vacation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they rather have me cook than go out. So it's, I didn't mess myself up.
All right, so now we're going to shift gears a little bit, and I want to talk about a table for two. Okay. But before we jump into the questions on that, why don't you tell us a little bit about the story? Just give us a quick summary of the plot and who the characters are, the main characters.
Okay, so this is my first time actually writing a small town series. And when the publisher
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you really quick. And is it more women's fiction is it considered romance?
I think it's still considered romance. I think, yeah, it is. But because there's so much room for side characters, I think they kind of lump it into both of those categories a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit women's fiction too, maybe. But I think it's still categorized under romance. But I did look and see that they did have it under both categories. So
I noticed that too. And I was curious to know how you felt about it, like how you categorized it.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate because it's a little bit of her journey and their journey. So it's kind of more a lot of it. Yeah. But Serenity is a transplant from a big city, but she's been there, I think 6 years, 5 or 6 years, and she's loving that small town vibe. And so she has her little regular get togethers with her supper club sisters, one of whom got a promotion and then asked if she could kind of look out for her big brother who was going to be moving into the house to look over to watch out for the grandmother, because they didn't want Grandma Nana to be alone there. So fireworks to begin with. And she's like, oh, sure, I'll look at it. But that's it. Friendship, nothing else. I don't care how he looks, whatever, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a more of a not so friendly to lovers kind of story. Mm-hmm. And you get to have all the small town vibes of nosy neighbors. Everybody's in your business. And the meddling family members. So you get all of that good stuff in there. Yeah. Yeah. And Gabriel is a city boy from Atlanta through and through, thinking I'm just going to roll up here, stay for about 3-4 months, get Nana to move on back to Atlanta. We good. And Nana's like, I don't think so, bro. So they don't start off on a great foot, but they end up on a really good one.
Yeah. Yeah. They kind of definitely started out on a bad foot.
Yeah.
When they first met.
Yes. Yes. It was not cute.
Right. Okay. So were from the characters that you've written in this particular story, did you enjoy writing either one of them, whether it was Gabriel or Serenity, more than the other?
No, I think I love them both because both of them had a love of food.
Mm-hmm.
Serenity was all about, experimenting and trying all these wonderful things. And if you read the book, like pretty much everything in there are things that I've cooked.
Oh,
the desserts, the little lamb chops that they had.
The baking, all of that.
The baking, yeah. I've done that too. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I've done that. And especially the desserts with the, and if you go to a book event, then y'all know that I bring brownie. And every time I go to a book event, people don't say you bringing books. They ask me if I'm bringing brownies. So that's what I get when I go to a book event. Are you bringing those brownies? You bringing brownies, right? But yeah, so I think I love that. And I loved Gabriel's character too, because he loved food as well. But he loved to, he was learning to cook, and he could cook pretty well too. But so it was just very cool to have both characters who loved cooking and could bond over that, the great food and the atmosphere that comes with it.
Now, let's see. India said she's craving those strawberries that you described in the book.
With the cup? Oh, with the strawberry cup? Yeah, India? Are you talking about the strawberry cups?
Probably India? The boozy ones, I'm thinking.
Oh, the strawberries. Oh, I did both. Yes, I did do those.
Yeah.
And see, and the crazy thing, okay, so I'm going to let y'all in on another little secret tidbit about me. I don't like chocolate. I don't eat chocolate. But I make every kind of chocolate, everything. I just don't eat it. So, and the chocolate cups where you mold the chocolate cup and fill it with chopped strawberries or strawberries and raspberries that have been kind of, I put a little bit of sugar to sweeten them just a little bit and then scoop them into the cup and you can eat the whole cup. The first year I made those, I made them for my kind of, it used to be an annual Christmas Eve family get together. Those things, I think I had made maybe like 24 of them. Those things were gone off that little plate in less than 2 minutes. Gone.
Wow.
Gone. And the boozy berries are cool too. Now I just ate the berry minus the chocolate with the booze in it, and it was good.
So, oh, I bet it was.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, those whiskey ones, very potent. Whiskey ones are very potent too. Though they really were potent. Yeah. So, but they're good. They're very good. Yeah, yeah.
Now, so Jennifer says she's waiting on some, and I think that was about the brownies.
The brownies before. Jennifer? You talking about the brownies, Jennifer?
Yeah, I think so. You got to...
If you talk about the brownies, Jennifer, I know. So Jennifer, you know, you're supposed to be coming to an event, sis. We waiting on you to come to an event. I might have to just go on and break down and send you some though, because you're my sister.
Yeah, she confirmed it. She said, yeah.
I know, yep. Okay. All right. I know. I'm supposed to be sending my sister some brownies. I might have to just break down and send you some, girl. You just never know. We might show up in the mail one day.
And Mitzi says, Mitzi, she's ready for your cookbook. But you had some recipes in the back.
I do. I probably need to amend one of them. So the one that's in the back here for the vanilla extract should be 1 ounce of vanilla beans to the one cup versus 5 or 6 beans.
Okay.
I've done more research since then. It's like, no. We're gonna put a whole ounce. It needs to be a whole ounce. Yes. So if y'all read it, look in the bag, just cross out 5 or 6 beans and put 1 ounce.
1 ounce.
Weighed, 1 ounce weighed of vanilla beans into one cup of your spirits. Yeah. Yeah, Missy, I don't know about a cookbook though. Whew, no, that's a lot.
You mentioned the small town and the neighbors and all that. And one of the things that was kind of funny to me was Adele, the neighbor who was
out the window. Yes.
Yes. And then running back and telling Nana and everybody else in the whole town what was going on between Serenity and Gabriel.
Right, right. And everybody is all over town. And Natasha's like, I heard that.
Yes. And approaching them. Like, oh my God. That's terrible.
Yes. I love Nana too. She was too funny. But she kind of backed down when Gabriel did the wave, threw up the wave at her though.
Yes. What she saw that she like closed her curtains real quick. Yeah,
she dropped that window real quick.
Yeah, as she should.
Yeah,
she's in my home business. okay, but so back to the story. Now, I wanted to find out about your favorite quotes from the book. And actually, let me see, because I have one that I really liked. It's really short. It's just one short sentence, but it says that men didn't want their hearts broken any more than women did. And I just thought that was really, I guess, profound and really the truth, right? Especially in this story, because you saw how Gabriel struggled because his heart had been broken just like her heart had been broken in the past. So neither of them wanted that. So that was the quote that I sort of latched onto and highlighted in my version.
Yeah.
Do you have any that you
think that? No.
Go ahead.
I don't actually. I don't have one.
You know?
Okay. I don't even have a quote, I don't think, in this one. I don't think I have one in this one.
Well, what were you going to say about that particular one?
I think I love showing the vulnerability in my heroes and that, you know, these men. We always run around and talk about that there are no good Black men or good, you know, good men. Mm-hmm. And then you find one and then you make a mess. Then you do crazy stuff and then wonder why. And so they're like on the same thing. It's like, hey, you don't want your heart broken. Me, I don't either. Like we somehow think because they're men, the masculinity means that, well, their hearts can be broken and they'll be okay. The same. Our hearts are still vulnerable no matter who we are.
And I think too, as a society, we don't even really allow men to express their feelings very much.
Don't.
So
we call them soft. They're soft or punk if they show this kind of emotion. And I think for me, it's a strength to be able to show it. So if y'all read my stuff, you will know that y'all will find some heroes in there that get emotional. That messes me up. That messes me up when I'm writing. I'll be sitting up here boohooing and crying if my heroes start boohooing and crying. And my husband comes in there and he's like, are you all right? Are you stuck? You can't think of them. I'm like, no, my hero's crying. He's like, oh, girl. So it always
gets me with my heroes.
Yes, I do when I'm writing. If I'm writing an emotional scene, I'm getting emotional too. So, but I love watching these men navigate it just like we do. So it's a cool thing.
And I'm glad too that, you know, just as a society and as readers, we're allowing that to happen more. Because I think when I think back about the older books that I used to read, romance books, the men were always very stoic and
very, you know what I mean?
And so now we're in an age where we can show them being a little more vulnerable, showing a little more emotion and, you know, crying sometimes, just things like that. I think it's all good.
I do too. I think it's great. Because especially if they're showing it in front of this woman who has captured their hearts, that means that they trust her enough to take care of those tears, you know?
And that's very interesting that you said that, because I've heard men say that one of the reasons why they don't express emotion in front of women is because they don't feel safe. They don't feel like it's, you know, they're in a safe space to be able to do that without being made fun of, et cetera, et cetera. So I think for me, one of the things that I love about it too is just when the hero expresses emotion because he's so in love, like that just gets me. That just makes me melt.
Me too. It does. Me too. Swoon, right?
Swoon. I start swooning. Yes.
Yes. Agreed.
Okay, so I had mentioned before we got started that I might want you to read an excerpt from the book. Were you able to find a scene that you could read for us?
Oh, yeah. And that's going to be a really quick one.
Okay.
And this will be just a really quick one. And I'm going to just set it up. Like I said, this was a not so friendly to lovers kind of story. So this is where I'm reading when she has, you know, they've had their first couple of little run-ins and little snarky kinds of thing. And she realizes that she kind of overreacted because it was, you know, her friend made her see that she kind of overreacted because she was thinking what his comments were similar to her ex-boyfriend's comments. But her ex-boyfriend had meant it. Gabriel didn't. He had no clue what was going
on. Gabriel,
he's just trying to be, you know.
Just...
So she's right. So she's gonna, you know, she's gonna try to apologize and whatnot. So this is what she's going to do. So I'm gonna think she's going to make some of her little brownies to take over to him. So once the brownies reached room temperature, she cut 4 generous portions and put them into a plastic container. Just apologize, give him the peace offering, and leave. Simple. Stealing herself, Serenity left to make the delivery. She found him on his knees in the yard with his back to her. Her name is Serenity, but I haven't seen one thing serene about her, he was saying, obviously talking to someone on the phone, more like uptight and irritating. And I don't even know what is that right? She placed a hand on her hip and glared at him. Gabriel spun around and came to his feet. Serenity, hey, uptight and irritating? Well, I don't know why your mother named you Gabriel, because you're no angel. She was so angry, she threw the container at him. Wow, he muttered a cut. a curse and rubbed a spot on his head where the container had hit him. She shot him another lethal glare and stormed off. Serenity, wait. Ignoring him, she slammed her door. So much for calling a truce. So, and then I'm going to just switch it over and we're going to just do a little bit so you can hear from his point of view how mm-hmm. he felt about that. Mm-hmm. Gabriel stood in his yard, stunned. She actually threw something at me. Gabe, you all right, man? He completely forgotten about being on the phone with Darius. Yeah, fine. As to make him out to be a liar, the spot on his temple where the container hit him throbbed. Was that Serenity yelling? Yes, she overheard my comment and threw a container or something at me. He searched for the offending object and spotted it in the bushes about 2 feet away. Darius burst out laughing. Obviously, she hit her mark. Oh, man, you're going to make me hurt myself laughing at you. Gabriel didn't see anything remotely funny. Okay, he had called her uptight and irritating, but he didn't see how that translated to having an object hurled his way. The woman must have pitched on some baseball team because her speed and accuracy were dead on. The pain in his head could attest to that. So there we are. So you can find out what happens after he eats those brownies, though.
Right. And I see that the brownies played a prominent role in the story. And you mentioned before that you make these amazing brownies. So I'm assuming that's where you got the idea from.
To put it in the book?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I did. I can't remember when I started. I think I was trying to look for something different to take to book events. And mm-hmm. I did it soon on. I think it was like 2015 or 16, maybe a couple of years after I started writing. I went to an event and took those brownies. And ever since then, I get hounded. And if I don't take them, people are like, you don't have brownies. You don't have, where are the brownies? So
that's awesome. Okay, so thank you so much for sharing that excerpt. That's a pretty, I thought that was a funny scene between them. It was just completely unexpected. And the funny, what made it even funnier is the fact that she went out there with good intentions. And
exactly. Overheard him. It's like, you know what? Mm-hmm. Well, forget it. The fact that she tossed the container, you know, at his head. Of course, that was literally, when I was writing it, that wasn't even my thought when I first wrote it. So she was going to just take them back and say, forget it. And then, I don't know, as I was typing, the next thing I know, those brownies were across the yard and on his head. So there it is.
And then he ate them.
Well, he tore those brownies up and he was trying to figure out real quick how he's going to apologize, make mm-hmm, her be friends mm-hmm. or something.
Right. Do you have any other scenes that you wrote that you liked in the story that you want to share with us?
I do.
Okay.
I love the picnic scene, the date that they had for the picnic when he found, him and his friends had done some exploring when they came back to visit. And they found this little hidden kind of inlet area that had mm-hmm. like, you know, golden sand and, you know, beautiful crystal clear waters, and that nobody seemed to go through because it's so far out and, you know, in a little kind of obscure place. And I think I loved it because when he picked, you know, he fixed the food and, you know, she was remembering what happened the last little, because they had a little contest and he had to confess about some things about that contest.
That was so funny when he messed up the dish. He had to go to the restaurant
Right. And so she's skeptical about it. And he did fried chicken and potato salad, you know. So and I love being able to throw in those, okay, fried chicken, you know, you don't be messing up fried chicken. But it's, you know, downright sacrilegious to be talking about who messed up the potato. You know, the potato salad is serious business. So she's like going to just kind of watch him and going to take a little couple of little bites and like, well, wait a minute, hold on. I'm sorry, I dissed your food. It's good, you know. And that, so it to me, it's like it kind of showed her playful side because she was tend to be a little bit more serious with him initially, not really letting him see that fun side of her. And then also when they were doing on the walk and she kind of belted, broke out into the golden sand, reminded her of a yellow brick road, and she starts singing, ease on down the road, mm-hmm. dancing with it. So I think I love that scene.
Those are really good. I, along the same lines, like I mentioned, I really like the scene where they had the contest where they were both supposed to cook. Yeah. And then he just totally lied. But I'm glad that you had him confess to her immediately when
like
he had done.
Before even.
Yes.
I did not want readers to think that he was manipulative, you know?
Right. So I'm glad he confessed to her. But then and she took it well. Like they both laughed about it. And I think that was one of those scenes where you could really see them softening and getting closer.
It was kind of a turning point of sorts.
Yes.
It was kind of the beginning of a turning point for them. When he could laugh, he says, "Trust me, you do not want to taste those." And I just remember laughing with him tasting them. And, you know, and okay, I'm going to just tell y'all a secret. And since my sister don't really read books and stuff, because I got that idea from her. Because we went down one year to visit, you know, for her. And she cooked dinner. She's not the cook. She's not the cook. So she did the same dish, cinnamon, way too much.
Ooh.
So I doctored it enough where it took some of it down. It's like ain't too much you can do once you go past the point of no return, but you know, I fixed it up and got it to where it toned it down some, but it was hilarious. So that's where I got that thought from. And that was some years ago. That scene, it just popped in my head, that memory, and I was like, "Ooh, I'm putting this in here."
Right. It was perfect. I think it worked really well. And considering that the two of them, you know, they were both very hesitant, because we were just talking about how that scene was sort of a turning point for the two of them in their relationship or their friendship. And one of the things that I think is always funny in romance novels is when we get these heroes and heroines who are like, "We're just going to be casual, no strings." Mm-hmm. And I'm just this is not going to work. It never works. It's just funny to see them fall for each other.
That's the story of my life too. Let me just be real. That's the story of mine too.
You tried the casual thing.
No, it wasn't even gonna be casual. We could just be friends and that's it.
Oh.
I'm not here to stay. I plan to just finish school here. I'm moving to Atlanta in 2 years when I'm graduated with my therapy degree, because I already knew where I wanted to live, where I wanted to work. Yeah. So
I never made it to
Atlanta. And yeah, okay. So there we have it. It doesn't work, people.
It doesn't work, people. But it makes a great idea for a romance novel.
It does. It really does, but it doesn't work.
Yeah. So what I was gonna ask you is, what do you consider the theme or themes of your novel? Do any of them relate to that idea, or do you have other messages that you wanted to convey?
With things, for this one, it's just love of good food, friendships, sisterhood, and love. Because we didn't talk about it a little bit, but one of the biggest things in here is the friendship and the sisterhood that Serenity has with her girls. And they have their little, you know, bi-monthly supper club dinners and whatnot. Despite their busy schedules, you know, they try to get together and maintain that friendship. And I love, you know, these women friendships, because, you know, that's something that seems to be sometimes getting lost also in society, is that we're always competing versus trying to lift one another up and not realizing there's room for every last one of us to succeed if we can just always bring each other along. And so that's really a big theme in there, the friendship and the sisterhood. But then also I got a chance to do male friendships too, because he had a supporting cast of boys, that his boys that were his ride or dies, and that were like, "No, we going to get your girl," you know, so they were supportive as well. And we don't see that as often as well either. So I love to show friendship, male friendship too in my book. So.
Yeah, the friendship aspect was very, very evident. And like you said, even with the men, because when it was close to the end of the book, when two of the guys, I believe, showed up unexpectedly to check on him.
Yeah, because he was running from his feelings, and he was not trying to talk to them, because he knew if he answered the phone and talked to them, they would know. So and they just showed up. "Nah, what's up?" "Mm-mm. Nope.
Yeah, I thought that that was really good, showing the relationships between them and also the family relationships really well portrayed in the story too.
I love Nana and her drive. Mm-hmm. That was the other scene, but that was one of my other favorite scenes, the drive to the doctor's office with Nana.
Mm-hmm.
When Gabriel was thinking he gonna need to be the one seeing the doctor, because she's zipping down the street like she's qualified for the Indy 500.
He was nervous. He was
whipping around corners, speed.
Leave that woman alone. She's been driving since before you died.
I know. But, you know, it's like reaction time gets slow. Oh my gosh, listen, I'm driving back. So I loved it. So you, the next book comes out in August. So you'll get to see Nana again with her bestie. Yes, okay. Her bestie is the hero's grandmother in this next book. So.
Okay. Now, it's I don't know if she is or not, but was she the lady that came up? There was a lady that came, an older woman that came up and spoke to.
Oh, yeah. No.
No. Nope. Okay. Not her.
Yeah. Right. No. Those people are not in there this time around.
Oh, okay.
The only person that you'll see again is Nana. Yeah. In the next book. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. Well, that's it for my questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Before we go, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that you have the next book coming up. When did you say that was?
It releases August 8th and it's called A Perfect Pairing.
Okay. And where can listeners find you online?
You can find me, you can find me on Facebook at Author Cheryl Lister. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Cheryl Lister. And then, that's it. Or my website is CherylLister.com and email is CherylLister@gmail.com. So if you want to just shoot the breeze, send me a note, whatever, ask a question. I got you. I'm more than happy to answer those questions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. And I'm going to wrap things up. Thank you to everyone listening. And an extra special thank you to our guest, Cheryl Lister.
Thank you.
Make sure you grab a copy of her novel, A Table for Two. Until next time, laugh often, love hard, and read a lot. Thank you.